Test, test.
Yeah.
Test, test of a recording of David Lee on November 16th, 2002 in David's living room. Test.
Oh, wait a minute. Come right now.
Okay.
Can you tell if it's...
Yeah.
It's sounding working. Okay?
It's working now.
Okay.
It had just gotten cold.
And this is just an archiving...
Right.
Tape, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And, we were talking about this over the phone, but I just wanted to, you just started talking about it. Can you just relate to me what you recall happened leading up to? You went to a Sing the National in Birmingham, you told me, in December of...
Might have been in June.
June, 1995?
Yeah.
And then... What happened there that led to you going to do the singing school in Chicago?
No, I don't know what happened there. It wasn't anything that we did there that led... let me say that different. I've been told later that there was some things said there that other people picked up on. It wasn't anything that... It was something we said, but it wasn't something that registered with us. And I've been told that some people heard us saying that we were changing the Sing in Hoboken to this to be the same as all the Sings in Alabama. And I remember that we were announcing that because we thought that we had to do that in order to attract some of those Alabama singers or North Georgia singers to come sing with us. We were letting them know that we're not so strange, that, you know, you can come sing with us in Hoboken because we're doing like y'all are now. We're not doing those old things that we used to do anymore. And so we were that was bragging. I mean, we were not bragging, but we were advertising, I guess you'd say. And we had made some changes and we thought it was a change for the better. And it was a change for the better. We're glad we made the change. But what I found out later, and this is years later, that some people were disturbed by that. They didn't want us to change. And so I've been told that that's the background of that is that because they were concerned about us changing, they knew they couldn't stop us from changing. So they decided to have this singing school in Chicago to for us to come up there before it was gone and explain how it was done and teach them how we did it and put it on the way they did and let them video it and audio record it and all that so it would be saved for all posterity. That's what I'm told was the story. But that had nothing to do with us.
Right.
We didn't know about any of that. The first thing I knew about it is in November in Birmingham at Mount Pleasant Home Church, which was the Alabama State Sacred Harp Convention, was the first place that we met those Chicago folks. And I had talked to Judy Hoff on the phone a couple of times by then, or three or four times or something. That was the first place we'd ever met them. And that weekend is when Ted Mercer asked me, what did I think about coming to Chicago and teaching a singing school? Would I be willing to do that? And I was surprised by that, number one, because when he said singing school, when we think of singing school down here, we think of teaching somebody how to sing the notes and teaching them how to read the notes. And I couldn't imagine, as good as those people could sing, why they would want me to go up there and teach them how to sing, because they could sing better than I could. In my mind, they were much better than me. So I talked with him about it a little bit, and he made me understand that that wasn't what he was talking about. He wanted us to teach them our way, share with them our way. So it wasn't really a school in that sense of the word the way we would understand it, but to just explain and share with them how we do things and how we always did things in Hoboken. And then I corresponded with him by letter over the next couple of months, and they finally picked out this date in March, this weekend, first weekend in March, I think, is when it was, of 1996. And so that's when we went up there. Me, and Kathy and Clark and Julie and Daddy and Mama went up there for that weekend.
And that was the first of those sorts of what I now call your out-of-town gigs.
That's yeah.
That was the first time you had done anything like that.
Right, that was first one.
And when you understood what it was he meant by singing school, you at that time weren't a singing school teacher here in Hoboken, in the traditional sense, were you? Wasn't Clark the one that did that?
Well, no. At that point in time, there hadn't been a singing school taught in Hoboken since me and Clark were teenagers. Daddy and Uncle Wilson were the last two singing school teachers. And when they stopped teaching singing school, when all of us kids were grown, Daddy and Uncle Wilson and them stopped teaching the singing school, which was normal. Because by the time we were grown, then we should have been teaching the next generation. But because of all the things that were going on in that time period, we didn't do it. And so it went on for a space of years that we didn't teach a singing school. But, and I don't remember when the first singing school we taught again here, but it was like, there was like a 20-year span or 25-year span from the last actual singing school until me and Clark talked about it and decided that if we didn't go teach the singing school, there weren't going to be one taught. So we started teaching it. And it would have been along about the same time that we went to Chicago, but I don't remember that it was, you know, prior to that March of 96 or after that March of 96 or whatever. But it was along in that same time period when we were making all those changes that me and Clark talked about it and decided to teach a singing school. And Clark asked me if I would teach it. Okay. I didn't care who taught it, just as long as we had one.
So you and Clark would have been the logical persons to do what you did in Chicago as sort of emissaries. It wasn't something that at that time you had necessarily been doing here, but you would have been, if anyone was going to do it, what you're telling me, it would have been you.
Yeah, it would have been me and Clark.
Because I know that you did one in January or February of 97, which is when I met you, and the first recordings I made, you were doing a singing school.
And that probably wasn't our first one.
And you had the big sing, you all told me you should have been here in December. Was that when you had the big sing?
That was December of 96,
that the recording was made at. And then this singing school in Chicago was the March of that. That's before that. So.
Right. Well, that's when we started teaching the singing schools down here again and teaching the little kids how to sing. My kids grew up around it.
Right.
And so did Clark's and so did a lot of it. But we never had an official singing school like we've had and you've seen us have and have recorded.
Right. So when you were asked to by Ted Mercer and the Chicago folks, you and Clark decided who was going to, that you were all going to go and do this together. And did you talk about what you were going to teach and how you were going to do it?
No. Mm-hmm. Clark, and I say this, I don't say this the wrong way. Clark was the sing leader up until the sings at Hoboken stopped being the way they were.
Right.
Clark was the last of what I call the old-time sing leaders in Hoboken. He was the last one. And it the sing actually died. It stopped. And Clark told me, he said, I'm giving it up. But along about that same time is when I was concerned about it being given up. And I guess this is and this was the Lord working all this. This is the way it had to be because Clark's now preaching and he couldn't do both. It would be kind of tough for him to do both. So Clark actually was moved out of the way and he gave it up. He told me he did. And so I went and asked him, I said, well, I'm not ready to give it up myself and I'm going to go start a sing over here at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church. And I said, but I need some help. Will you come support me? And he said, well, yeah, he would. Of course he would. And so from that moment in time, when Clark gave it up and I asked him to go with me to Mount Calvary, that's when the leadership switched. And it went from Clark to me. and that's not, nobody's no better than anybody else, but I just feel like the Lord had a hand in the way that was done. And so from that point forward then, because the way we've been in Hoboken is you have one leader, the ultimate leader. Now, there may be a lot of people that can pitch songs or a lot of people that could actually lead a sing, but you had one leader, and it kind of devolved to him. There was no election or anything, just like with me and Clark then. Clark had been the leader, and if you wanted to have a sing, you would get a hold of Clark and see if he could come. And if he couldn't come that weekend, well, you'd have to change it to another weekend unless you could find somebody else that could lead it for you. But he was the main leader. And if somebody had a question about a sing, putting on a sing or having a sing or when they could schedule it or something, Clark would have been the one, and Uncle Wilson before him. Well, at this moment when it transitioned between me and Clark, then all of the responsibility that Clark had was no longer on Clark. And now it's on me, and it's understood among the community also. When that happens. And so from that point forward then, instead of asking Clark or Clark being the one to step forward, that's when it fell to me to do that. So that's why Ted came and asked me. And I went, of course I went and asked Clark, because he's been the leader and in my mind will always be a sing leader. Plus, he and I are the closest friends in the world. I don't have a closer friend than Clark. And anybody that I trust any more than Clark. And so, anything I do, I always talk to Clark about it. Because Clark is like, I say that Clark is my rock. Because Clark is so steady. He is so straight. And that's just the difference in me and Clark. But he is so firm and complete. And me, and I'm more flitty or whatever, loose cannon kind of thing. But I know I can always come back. As long as I keep one eye on Clark, I know I'm okay. And that's just the nature of our relationship. I'm the loud, brash one that's always trying new things and different things, and Clark's the anchor. He keeps me from going too far. And so that's why I always call on Clark to go with me and support me or help me in things like that. Plus, Clark has so much to offer anyway, because he's an extremely talented singer, very talented singer, has an amazing voice. And he was a leader before me, so he knows just as much about this stuff as I do. I'm a couple of years older than him, but a couple of years is not long. My daddy took us, my family, to a lot of sings. We went to a lot more sings than Clark's family did. Their daddy didn't take them to as many as we did, not way off. So I knew a few more of the singers than Clark did and all that. So, but he's got just as much to offer as I do. So that's why I would ask him to go with me. I would never have tried to go up there by myself, mm-hmm. not without asking him first.
Was that the first time that you had sung in the north, so to speak?
That was the first time we'd ever even traveled north. I'd never even been up north. When we were growing up, Daddy and Mama took us on a vacation one time to Pennsylvania because we had an aunt, a great aunt that lived up there. And but I was like 8 or 10 years old. But in my adult life, I'd never been farther north than South Carolina until we went up there. And that was the first
Chicago
big city.
It
was the first big city I'd ever seen in my life. It was the first time up north. It was the first time Clark and Julie had ever even flown on an airplane. It was only like my second or third time flying on an airplane. Kathy had been on one a couple of times. So it was a brand new experience for us all the way around.
Do you remember what some of your reactions were, especially with the singing? I know you were leading, you were there to teach them, but then there must have been a sing after.
Mm-hmm.
Were there things that you remember now? This is what, 7 years ago.
4, 6, 7 years ago, yeah.
That still kind of, think that really struck you, that seemed similar, that seemed different, that seemed strange, that seemed familiar.
The only two things that, and I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, but.
Comparing that environment to the ones that you grew up in.
It was radically different. There wasn't, we never, the whole time we were in Chicago, we never saw a dirt road. And we never saw a pasture or a field or field animals or farmhouses or anything. So it was radically different. This was a city.
But the singing itself.
The singing, well, they're good singers and they're very accurate singers. And they're not as, they sing different than we do. They're so much better at it. Until their singing is a lot prettier. But the one thing that I could, and I had to work to get across, hey, I want a hug. Yeah. The one thing I had to get across to them, and I tried to get across to them, and I didn't know exactly know how to put it in words while I was up there talking to them, is, and actually, as I understand, I made I made one guy uncomfortable. We sang down here. Our singing down here wasn't so we could make pretty music. It was so we could be together. And it was that, but this singing is a way that we can be together in a more intimate way than any other way that we can imagine. So it's because we're creating something out of our togetherness that's bigger than we are. Because I can't sound like a group of singers by myself, so I have to have a group of singers to do that. So it was the togetherness that meant the most to us down here, not the quality of the music that we were producing. Up there, they hadn't figured that out yet, or most of them had not at that time, and I'm hoping that more of them have now. But up there, their focus was more on the music. And I think that this is something I just think. The people up north are not as, won't allow themselves to be as open to one another, or won't allow their emotions to be exposed to others as easily as people in the rural South do. And I'm not sure why that is, and I may not even be right about that, but that's just something I picked up on, because they've all got this certain space where you come to, and then there you can't go any farther than that. And so all their singing that we shared together was done on this side of that wall. And it was obvious to me that there was this difference, because all I was getting from them was this singing. And what I was trying desperately to explain to them is that the good part is over on this other side, that you have to cross this wall to get to the good part. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I got that through or not. I think that some of them picked up on it. But I don't know if all of them did. And some of them may, even though they pick up on it, may fight against it.
They did a Cooper book singing when you went up there?
Yeah, it was the only, I wouldn't go for the Red Book.
Right. Well, let me just ask you, one of the things that struck me when I was in Portland a couple weeks ago, especially when they did the Denson book, which we did, they did both. They did Cooper and Denson that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
When you said the emotion wasn't there, I think I know what you're talking about, but one thing that struck me and one thing that Karen said when she and I were talking is that the singers who get in the middle there when they're singing out of the Denson book are singers that really know the music, as you said. They're actually, I mean, they're physically leading. I mean, they're beating time, and they're... Some of them are so much involved in it with their bodies that it almost looks like it's an out of mind experience, you know. It's just, and I asked Tali about it, because one of the things that Karen said when she saw that videotape that was made in 1999 that we were talking, or 1994 that we were talking about earlier in the week that Bill Ferris mm-hmm. came over and made, is she said that the people were singing there and they looked, what's the word she used? Dispassionate. In other words, there weren't, the emotions seemed to be, I would guess, would be internal, what people were feeling inside, that it wasn't reflected on their faces. And certainly it wouldn't have been, since the only person that got up in the middle was the song leader, you wouldn't have seen it, and that people weren't beating time. Now that could have been as the tradition was kind of dying out and you...
No.
But...
There's a reason for that. We were being we were being reverential.
Okay.
And the first time that I went off to one of those big things and saw some of those people get up in the middle and take on, so I was horrified.
It is a contrast.
Oh, my goodness. I was just horrified. I couldn't believe it. I was surprised to see them be that disrespectful is the way I put it. The way I felt about it. I didn't put it. I didn't say it. But I felt like they were being disrespectful.
Because
of the way they were carrying on. This exercise in their bodies during something as sacred as a Sacred Harp Sing. Now, I've been around it a lot, and now I understand, you know, and I'm used to it. I mean, you can get used to anything, I guess. And so it doesn't bother me like it did. But I was shocked. And to see them come wearing shorts or stuff like that, I was just shocked. You just didn't do that. This was a sacred thing we were doing. And, you know, you treat it with respect. So, yeah, I'm sure that we were all sitting quietly in our seats and not taking on and rambunctious and all that. Now, come break time, you know, if he'd have left the video on then, you'd have seen a lot of
right.
hollering and carrying on. But we had a certain decorum that we followed as saying like that.
Right.
And still do for the most part, though, because we've opened the sing up out here, we get a lot of people from all different walks, and you'll see about anything at Hoboken now.
Before you kind of went out from Hoboken before 1994. If you were sitting in a sing, would people who were seated be beating time?
A few, not many. Mm-hmm. Mostly men would do it, and mostly those that knew how to lead would do it from time to time. If they were particularly enjoying a song, then they might would beat time. Mm-hmm. But mostly they wouldn't. You just sit in your seat.
Mm-hmm. So the only way, other than that you would really get the body involved is the person who was walking time in the middle, the song leader.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. And see, the other thing is, and that just makes my point even better, or more, yeah, more clear. We weren't hooping it up and carrying on and just rocking back and to and waving our arms all over the place. And the fact that somebody up north would think that meant that we weren't emotionally attached, they're still not seeing what I'm talking about. We can sit here quietly, very simply and very quietly. Me and Clark, our relationship has been built over years and years of sitting quietly together and talking about things of the heart, exposing ourselves to each other and all the rest of us down here the same way. And that's what they won't do. Even though I see a northerner get up and do a virtual jig in the middle of the square, and they seem so passionate, but if you were to go to them and talk to them about it or about things that really matter deep down inside, they wouldn't share that with you. They wouldn't want you to know about them, and they wouldn't really care to know that much about you. Not on that deep inside level. And that's the part I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's not how wavy and how exercised they can get. That shows passion, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I'm talking about. When there's a deep love and respect that we have, a spiritual love and respect that we have for each other, that goes beyond all this bodily exercise. And that's the part that when I was trying to explain it to them up there, I wasn't even able to put it in words because I didn't know exactly what it was going on. But I knew that there was something that was just slightly out of focus or something. And the way I finally explained it to them, and this is the part that I found out later that I was getting in front of somebody else, those northern singers and the Alabama singers, they sing with a pulse. They put in their songs, and they highlight this pulse, and they talk about it, and they teach it to do that. 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, or 1, 2, 3, 4, when they're beating time are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They have this pulse. And when they sing with that. And as you heard in there a few minutes ago, we didn't do that. We have a rhythm, you know, 1, 2, 3. And you mentioned Uncle Wilson pushing his rhythm a little harder even than...
He punches each note, but there's not a pulse. It's like
there's not a pulse to it, no. And so what I was trying, and I remember on Sunday morning getting up in front of him and stopping him and saying, listen, you've got to stop this pulsing. You're ruining the whole thing. Without realizing, I never knew, because that was my first time up there, you know. I never knew. And Richard DeLong, who is a fabulous singer from Atlanta area, was up there. He was the only other Southerner up there with us. And he was over in the back, and he had been teaching singing schools up there, and he'd been harping on, you've got to learn to pulse. You have to, you know, and he would demonstrate it for him and teach it. And so, unbeknownst to me. And so when I got up there and told him, y'all have got to stop this pulsing, you're just ruining the whole thing. I would love to have known what I know now and go back and watch Richard's face when I said that. Because some of the others picked up on it. But I said, you got to sing more together. You're not singing together enough. And you're not singing a smooth enough or something. But there was just something that was missing. But we found some people up there that we just absolutely fell in love with. And they seem to have reciprocated it. And it goes on till today. And it's the kind of thing that... And my cousin... I got a cousin that lives over in Monticello, Florida. And she said this to me. And this is, and it was the first time I heard it said out loud. We only see each other, me and her, every few months or maybe once a year or something. We don't see each other real often. But we grew up around each other and we love each other dearly. And she remarked to me one time, she said, isn't it amazing that we can be apart for so long and have our different lives, but every time we come together, it's like we pick up right where we left off. It's like we have never been apart. You and I don't have any getting reacquainted period. You and I have come to an understanding, and it's like I can depend on your friendship and you can depend on mine or something. We don't have to go back and reestablish these bases.
Yeah, I can walk in the door and the first thing I can say is, this road is just rather than, hi David, nice to see you.
Yeah, we can just take off on it.
Right.
So that's what I was trying to convey, that some sense of that. Mm-hmm. And there's some of them up there that we have that relationship with, and it came from that meeting. Mm-hmm. That when we met them, they opened themselves up and we were open. And we just immediately fell in love with each other, and we still can today. One of them could walk in the door right now, and they would just join right in with us, and we'd have the best time. But there's a lot of them that won't do that. And I think it's because they won't allow themselves to do that, and I don't know why. Because they're missing out on the real issue, I think.
Tell me about, how did the Lloyds, I understand they ordered a bunch of Lloyds hymnals, and you also worked with those when you were up there. How did that...
That was done on Saturday night. They cooked supper, and all of them came over to this one place, and they brought those Lloyd hymn books that Ted had ordered.
Did you know they were going to do that?
I guess I did. I don't remember now that I'm being surprised. Actually, I think I did know, because they wanted to sing out of the hymn book. But I don't know where they... I do know where they... Because when we met them in Birmingham, that Mount Pleasant home I was talking about, me and Clark would sing for them. They wanted us to sing. So we'd sing, and we'd sing our old songs, which were hymn book songs. So we got the hymn books out. So they were fascinated by them. And I think they had already been to Alabama enough that they had seen a few of them. So they wanted to know if we could do some more of that while we were up there. So we did that on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. They ordered all those hymn books and, you know, passed them out and gave everybody some. What was fun, though, we sang out of the hymn book a good while that night. Richard DeLong, who I said was the other Southern singer, though he's from North Georgia. He's from Atlanta, Carrollton area, I think. But he was raised the same background as us, same similar background. And he knew the hymn book. And his family had used that hymn book, too. He would ask us, he'd get us to turn to one and ask us and he would sing a certain tune. Do y'all know this tune? Some of them we did and some of them we didn't. And so then we would turn to one and ask him, well, do you know this one? And we'd sing it for him. And some of them he did and some of them he didn't. It was kind of a, we Richard and us were kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, measuring songs with each other, you know, having a sing-off or something. And meanwhile, the folks that were up there, they were enjoying it because they didn't care. They didn't know any of them. So they were singing whatever we wanted to sing.
They must have ordered the version of the voice that you weren't using in the meeting house, right? Because the other one wasn't available.
It's the
700.
The 700, right. The 705 is, actually the 705 was available before the 700 and available after the 700.
Right.
This 700 was right there in the middle.
Right. Did you have any issue at that point with working with this other version of the hymnal?
No, because there were enough songs in common that we could sing out of it, and, you know, I didn't care.
You've been thrown out of the church, so that issue was moved.
Over, right. I wasn't going to be in trouble for doing that. Right. I wanted to teach them out of the Cooper book. I wanted to expose them to the Cooper book because I felt like they just didn't know enough about it. And if they could sing out of it, they'd learn out of it. And I knew that they wanted us to come up there real bad. They let us know that, which we wanted to go. But I thought, this is my opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so they even had one of the women that was a close, Judy Hoff, that was a friend, to call me back and say, and she tried to make, you know, the case that, well, there wasn't any Cooper books up there, and couldn't we just do it out of the Red Book? There's a lot of songs in common and everything. And she was trying to get me to, let's do it out of the Red Book. And I told her I didn't want to. I said, no, I can't do that. I won't be able to go. If I got to do that, I won't be able to teach it. So they relented and said, okay. So they bought a bunch of Cooper books, which they don't sing out of them in Chicago. But from that came the Seattle people singing out of the Cooper book, and the Minnesota people singing out of the Cooper book, and now the New England people singing out of the Cooper book, and even the people in England know about the Cooper book and sing some of the songs out of it. And that all came because I would not relent on teaching the Cooper book in Chicago.
That's really, even though Talia said that you used different books here, and mm-hmm. you were really, your growing up period, most of the time, if you had a book, it was the Cooper book.
Mostly it was the Cooper book, though we had the Red Book, and we sang out of it some. But yeah, it was mostly the Cooper book, the Blue Book.
Well, now, having actually experienced firsthand a Red Book singing, and the breakneck speeds that they sing some of the fuguing tunes, it makes sense to me what the story that you told me of. Who was it? Didn't you tell me that, was it your Uncle Wilson or somebody who went up to one of these things in the northern part of Georgia?
And recorded it.
And came back and didn't even think it was Sacred Harp singing because it was so fast. Am I remembering that?
Yeah,
right?
We didn't think it was. Him and Uncle Thomas went up there, but he recorded it.
It was Wilson?
Mm-hmm. Uncle Wilson and Uncle Thomas. And we would get him to get it out along and long and play it for us so we could laugh about it, because it didn't even sound like Sacred Harp singing, though they called it that.
Right.
And so he would play us a song or two, and we'd all have a big laugh, and, you know, and then put it up till the next time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wasn't Sacred Harp singing, right. Not in our mind.
Right. And you told me that the first time when the subject of the videotape that was made by Bill Ferris, that there were people from Alabama that came over, and that was the first time that that large a group of outsiders had come mm-hmm. to sing, and that was in December.
That would have been in December of 95.
95?
Or 94.
94.
94. Maybe it was December of 94 was the first time they came over, yeah.
And what were your feelings about having a bunch of outsiders come at that point?
Well, at that point, you know, we had changed the Hoboken Sing. Because in May of 94 was the last time we sang the old way. And Buell Cobb was there. He was the last person from the out. Buell Cobb made a trip down here just so he could go to that sing, because he'd called me and I told him, we won't be doing it like this anymore.
How did he know about you?
Because I had met him in March, 2 months before that, in Atlanta at the Georgia State Convention. That was the first Red Book sing I had ever been to.
I thought the first time you went out was in Tallahassee, and I thought
that was the first time I went out was in June of 94.
But March of 94 you went up to a...
No, I got the years mixed up. We got the years mixed up.
Okay.
Because June of 94 was the first time I went out. The following March is when I met Buell Cobb.
Okay.
And 2 months later is when he came down to So 95 is when it had to be.
Did he make a tape?
December of 95 is when the Alabama folks come and sang with us.
It was
December
96.
He didn't make a tape. Mm-hmm. March of 95 is when I went to the Georgia State Convention and met Buell Cobb. May of 95 was when he came down here, spent the night with us, and went to the thing at Hoboken, and that's the night that that tape was made.
Mm-hmm.
No, that wasn't the night that tape was made. That was the last time that we had that old thing. So December of 94 is when those old, when the Alabama folks come over.
Mm-hmm.
Because the following May is when we stopped having it that way. And that's when Buell came. So December of 94 is when that videotape was made.
Okay.
I don't remember the point of where I was going with all this, but
how you felt
the
about
chronology
how,
of it.
How they felt about this group of people coming.
Okay, I know where I was going now.
Because you had said
we had already...
You'd gone out.
Yeah, yeah. We'd already gone out of the church, and we were already making some changes in the thing out there. And so we were excited for them to come. We were nervous about them coming because we knew how good they could sing and how well their sings were. And so we were nervous that they wouldn't be very impressed with our little sing. But we were at the same time excited that they were coming. And glad that they were coming to sing with us. I thought the sing went very well. And Mr. Melvin Hickox made a comment to Stanley Smith that he enjoyed Stanley singing and said he could come back anytime. But there was a few that didn't. And I remember that Uncle Thomas, we asked him what he thought about it. And he said that it was fine for him to come, but it wouldn't do to mix, meaning that we shouldn't do this anymore. You know, it was all right this one time. We saw what it was like. Now let's don't do that anymore. Didn't want to mix with him. Uncle Billy, I remember asking him about it, and he thought it sounded good, just kind of casual and offhand that, well, it sounded pretty good. Not real impressed with it, I don't think. We were excited, but then that was in December, so 6 months later was the last time that Uncle Thomas or Uncle Billy or any of them has been out to Hoboken to sing, because they stopped coming because that summer is when Clark said he was giving it up, and that's when I asked him if we could start at Mount Calvary, and so we started the sing over.
Right.
And that's when we changed it.
And you said to me that this videotape was made, and no one said anything.
No. Nobody said anything about it. It was over in we were in the auditorium, and
at the school.
Yeah, out there where we go now, and he was over towards the you know, when you walk down the hall to go to the first set of double doors you come to is where everybody turns in. Well, he was over there in front of the other two double doors, not right in front of the doors, but over in that corner. That's where. So he was kind of out of the way where he was set up at. And there were a few people that would take recorders out there from time to time. I don't know that there was ever a video taken out there. Why nobody said anything to him, I don't know. Except maybe there was enough of them over there that everybody was kind of nervous about it. Plus the fact, Clark was the leader. And as I said earlier, the leader is the one that would really have been expected to have gone over there and said, you know, not to video. But Clark, of course, didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, probably, I mean, would be glad now that it was done. So nobody ever said anything to him. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But it just so happened. So now we've got a video of it. There is a video of it. I don't have it. I've never even seen it. I remember that night. I don't know where he was. I know what was going on that night. But I've not seen the video.
And when you... went then after that to Mount Calvary in 1995 in the summer and started the new tradition. You said to me that I wanted to ask you about the and maybe you don't want to, this is too difficult, but the issue of the prayer, you know, that is now done at the end. You said to me that you added the prayer, and the prayer is what broke it all up. And I knew that the prayer was one of the issues, having read that John Crowley had the minutes from the association meetings that weren't discussed is that he shared with me about the singing. But you didn't do prayer before like that?
Not at the Sings, no.
Was that something that you got from Alabama?
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's what got me turned out, was going to Alabama where they had prayer.
Right.
And the problem was, our people said to me that I was participating in somebody else's religion, which would be against our way. And so that's why they turned me out. My own position was that there's never a bad time for prayer, of all things, and there's never a bad place for prayer. And so I wanted us to add that. But we just added prayer at the close. We close with prayer. We don't open with prayer. Except on our all-day sing, we will. We'll open that morning and close that evening. But on our two-hour sings, we don't open with prayer. We just close with prayer.
So evidently that was a non-negotiable thing with you that you decided to add. I mean, is that...
Exactly.
Do you really believe now in hindsight that if you had decided not to do that, that the other side, the split wouldn't have occurred?
No.
That was just the issue that they chose to focus on.
Well, that's what they turned me out over, was not prayer at Hoboken now, because we hadn't added prayer at Hoboken when I was turned out. It was the fact that I was going to Alabama.
Oh, I see.
Where they were having prayer, and they were saying I was going off and participating in somebody else's prayer. That's why they turned Clark out, and that's why they turned me out, because we were going off and participating in somebody else's prayer. Once we were turned out,
then you added,
I had nothing to lose.
Then you added the prayer.
And I said, well, we're going to add prayer to our things, and we'll close with prayer. And,
Supper.
Supper ready?
Okay. Supper's ready.
Okay, be right there.
I know this is probably bad.
Huh? No, supper's never at a bad time. So that's why we added prayer, and that's how we were able to do it. And that may prevent some from coming. I don't know, but I think if they stay away for prayer because of prayer,
right,
they're staying away for the wrong reason.
Right. Right.
I used to believe that same way. I was just like them, but now in looking back, it seems so silly to think about. Because we had prayer at other times and places, and it just doesn't seem right that we would not, that we would fall out over having it at the Sing of all things, because that's a sacred place too. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. Anyway, that's what we did. Yes, I added it because I wanted it. I felt like it was necessary.
But the model for having it came from Alabama.
That's where, well, it did and it didn't. We dismiss at church. Our church always dismisses by standing for prayer, a dismissal prayer. We always would stand for that. So we didn't do that in the mornings. We didn't stand and have prayer in the mornings at church. But we always dismiss with prayer, and we do now where we go to church the way we'd go now, the same thing. Well, that's the way we did the Sing, is modeled after what. But where we got permission for it, in our minds I'm talking about, was we saw it done in Alabama and realized, yeah, that's the right thing to do. Why haven't we been doing this all along? And I wonder if we didn't used to do it, perhaps. But it got stopped for some reason. May not, I don't know. As far as I know, it was never done at the Sing. But it seemed like the right idea. When we saw it being done in Alabama, we said, yes, that's what we'll do. When we started doing it at Hoboken, we did it in the way that that we would do.
Right.
So our format for it in Hoboken is the way we've always done.
Right.
But we got the idea from going to over there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Alabama.